and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today I am joined by a very special guest. This man is a performance psychologist and has worked with some of the greatest athletes in the world, entertainers, business people. He's who people go to if they want to improve their general performance. That's why he's a performance psychologist. It's Dr. Phil Jauncey. How are you doing today, Phil?
Good to be here. Doing great.
Now, I must say I'm a little bit disappointed because when I thought I was getting Dr. Phil on the show, I thought I was getting a 6'4" Texan with a moustache, and then you walk in and I'm basically disappointed.
I was long Dr. Phil, long before him, actually. And actually, I have this strange accent. The accent you have at puberty is the one you're stuck with. And so I was born in Adelaide. But when I was hitting puberty, I was in Texas, El Paso, Texas.
Okay.
And both my folks are from Perth. But at school, they all talk like this because they're from Southwest Texas. Oh, they talk like this because they're from Mexico. And so when I came back to Brisbane and when I was 17, I had this broke. So if you come out from Scotland at age 5, you lose it. If you come 17, you never do. So I have this mix of Perth, Southwest Texas, and Mexico.
There you go. So the first I want to talk to you about now. This is my theory, and I want you to tell me if my theory is complete bogus or if it's a good theory. Now, we'll use sport because sport's my thing. I love sport. So I think the difference between a good player and a great player is decision-making, because I think the talent is kind of similar. So if we take like tennis or football as an example, like the ball's coming at you at 100 miles an hour. Like in tennis, you got to make a split-second choice. Do I drop shot? Do I cross court? Do I backhand? Or in football, you know, where are my teammates? Can I make that pass? And you literally have a second or split second to make that decision. Now, I reckon the difference between the good and the great is the ability to make the correct decision at the correct time. Am I right? Am I wrong?
You're wrong. Because what happens is, you see, one of the things I teach people is that if you got to get your mind right, you're stuffed. So, for example, I have 4 degrees in psychology, including a doctorate, 50 years clinical experience, and I can't control my mind or my emotions. So if I'm angry at you, I can't control that emotion. What I can control is saying, up yours or g'day. Or conversely, you've just got a job I think I deserve. I can't control feeling jealous. What I can control is acting jealously. So I see you backstabbing scoundrel. Everybody says, thank heavens we didn't give the job to Phil. If I say, listen, Goff, I thought I was going to get the job, thought it's better for the job. How can I help you? So what people don't understand is, why don't we perform well? Why don't we make those decisions? And the key is, you need to keep your computer on. What people do, there are certain things, and our brain is our willing slave. So our brain says, master, do you want the computer on or off? And the way it works out, are you doing the things that you normally do? Take a simple task, at least for me, put a plank across the floor and walk it without touching the carpet. Dead easy. Put that same plank 10 stories up. It's hard. Why is it hard? Well, you can see we're down on the floor. I looked ahead and let my computer do the walking for me. I'm ahead of myself. When I'm 10 stories up, I lean back. And one of the things the brain says, anytime you lean away from your goal, you don't want to succeed in it. So what happens is, the footballer who goes towards the ball makes the correct decision. The one who leans away from the ball makes a bad decision. And so it's about, how do you keep that computer on? Now, there's three basic rules of the brain. Rule number one is that the brain will always give us pain when what we're doing is not working. So if I walk on a floor and I step on a thumbtack, that pain is really good, because the pain is telling me what I'm doing right now is going to hurt me if I keep doing it.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to anesthetize that pain. I need to pull it out. And this is where I differ with a lot of people in psychology. They say you should be positive about yourself. But see, if you're performing badly in this job you have right now,
yep,
the last thing I want somebody to say, but you're a nice person. And you mean well, and don't change. See, there's a basic law of physics. For things to change, things have to change. So even when I pull a thumbtack out, I still have pain, because the brain says you need to take care. So I haven't anesthetized it. I embrace the pain. Now, if there's only a stone in my shoe and I drop it out, the pain goes. So the key here is, whenever I'm in pain, I've been turning off my computer and what I'm doing is not working. Now, what happens is, people think physical pain's all right. So if I go to a physio, they'll give my knee more pain. But if I go to somebody and say, listen, I've been depressing, they say, oh, you need to feel better about yourself. No, depressing means stopping. And so what happens if you have a condition, generally speaking, when you have a condition, they say, well, since there's no cause, we can't give you a cure. We can only give you palliative care. So if a player says they've lost their confidence, I say, where did you lose it? In the wimp bin? Is it in your pocket? Do you remember what color it is? No, what they mean is I've stopped acting confidently. Yes. And once I stop acting confidently, then what happens? I turn my computer off. For example, my case that you already worked out, my plan A is speak quickly, tell really, really bad jokes. For example, why'd the guy call his girlfriend Hinges?
Why is that, Phil?
She's something to adore. Why'd the guy get rid of his vacuum cleaner?
Why is that, Phil?
It sucked. Now, my point about this, I could have had a really, really bad day today.
Yes.
My wife could have picked on me. I always tell people when my wife and I got married, we had something in common. She loved me and I loved me. But I can still speak quickly, tell bad jokes. And I tell the story, my son Timothy, about 17 years ago, was 18. And he broke his elbow, got a reward, and he was coming down the steps at home. And he slipped. So to try to protect himself, he twisted, hit a pot plant, severed his kidney, ICU.
Ooh.
Now, fortunately, the rheumatology saved that. But the very next day, I was running this two-day course, and I was speaking quickly, telling bad jokes, but it was talking about Timothy. And somebody said, how can you be so upbeat with your son in hospital? I said, would it help Tim for me to be downbeat? Well, no. Would it help me to be downbeat? No. Would it help you for now? No. So why should we be downbeat? Everybody knows when you don't feel good, you can't act good. So say, okay, people, let's imagine everybody in this room is so depressed, life sucks so much, you need three straws, and a fire breaks out. And you know if you don't leave, you're going to die an excruciating, horrible death. How many of you would say, well, I would leave, but I'm depressed. Wait till I feel better. Or being positive, say, listen, people, got a bar of gold bullion for you outside, but you got to get it within the 180 seconds. How many would say, well, I would get it, but I'm depressed? My dad was a psychologist, and years ago, a man came to me and said, oh, Dr. Jonesy, I've fallen out of love with my wife. I want to divorce her. My dad said, fine. What I want you to do for the next 5 days, do something special every day for your wife. Like what? Take her out to eat. Buy her some flowers. On the sixth day, we were talking divorce. Came back on the sixth day, said, Dr. Jonesy, I'm embarrassed. My dad said, why? I fall in love with my wife. You see, what had happened, he was waiting to feel romantic to act romantically. But it's the other way around. When you act romantically, you feel romantic. So in sport, I tell people, you don't have to feel good to act good. But when you act good, it feels good. So whenever I'm not feeling good, my brain says, Phil, what you're doing right now is not working. Now, the second rule of the brain, remember our brains are willing slaves. So if I ask you, why does the brain give you some thoughts and not other thoughts? Why do you think that is?
Well, I suppose it's what's at the forefront of your mind at the time.
Sounds good. Wrong again. You're doing well.
I'm batting at 0-2, but go on.
Don't worry, I'll give you therapy afterwards. By the way, I should remind you that I'm not psychotic and neither am I. But anyway, the key here is that what the brain says is when I give you a thought, if you act on that thought, I'll make the thought louder. If you don't act on that thought, I'll make the thought softer. And so, for example, I call this the front desk secretary of the brain. It's actually called the brainstem reticular formation, but I talk to footy players.
Well, is it a little bit like, because I have heard about thought disputation. So as in like you have a thought and you question that thought. Is that a good thought? Is it a negative thought? If it's a negative thought, you disregard. If it's a good thought, you proceed.
It's close. Close, but it's like if you get an icicle water and the brain says, get out, it's cold, and you keep swimming.
Yep.
The brain says, you idiot, get out, it's cold, you keep swimming. You moron, get out, it's cold, keep swimming. It turns off the temperature. But if you get out right away, put your toe back in the water, it actually feels colder because you told the brain how much you want. So the brain simply says, if I give you the thoughts, if I'm your secretary and I give you a message from Fred Bloggs and you don't ring him, mm-hmm. I give you another message from Fred Bloggs, you don't ring him, give you a third message, Fred Bloggs, ring somebody else, then I'll stop giving the message. I give you a message, Sam Smith, ring him right away, then I'll make the message louder. Mm-hmm. For example, if every time I picked up the phone, I picked up the cigarette. As soon as the phone rings, the brain says, Phil, you need nicotine. Phil, you need nicotine. But if every time I pick up the phone, pick up a carrot, the brain's going to say, Phil, you need carotene. Now, equally addictive. People say, no, nicotine's far more. No, as far as the brain goes, the same. I used to live in a refinery, and I couldn't smell it. You get some ladies putting on some perfume. We say, no, you smell like a perfume factory. Or us guys raise our arms and people faint with body odor. And when I say, why can't we smell it? People say, you're used to it. No, women don't react. They don't go, passan, impulse, when they put on some perfume. We don't smell our armpits when we've been working out. So the brain turns it off. As I tell people, when I lived in the refinery and I couldn't smell it, people said, how come you can't smell it? Well, because I didn't react to it. So now this is really important. For example, I was just saying before we came on air, I like to watch my weight, so I keep it where I can watch it in front of me, a bit porky. And but when I used to go bike riding with my mates, go about 80K on my push bike, the first K out, my brain says, listen, You're a 70-year-old galah. You're told to be doing this. But I pedaled harder. At the end of 80K, I'm less tired than one because I didn't act tired. But if I'd got off after 1 kilometer, go, oh, I'm so tired. Oh, I'm so tired. I'd have to get off after half a kilometer. I had this squash player come to me one time. She said, oh, Phil, sometimes in between games, I get really down on myself. I said, what I want you to do is make the ugliest face you can. Because when you make an ugly face, you can't feel bad. Do it for everyone watching you. Say, you can't feel bad. It's impossible. She said it worked so much that during a game she made a mistake. She made an ugly face to the player. And she got in the top 10. And so this is called where if you don't want a bad thought, don't act badly. I have teenage girls come to me and they've been sulking for 3 days because somebody's insulted them. I said, how did it feel when you're sulking? Bad. And when you started acting sulkingly, how'd that make it feel? Worse. So why aren't you sulking now? We can't do it forever. So how did you decide 1 day, 2 days, 3 days to stop? And you can see by the looks in their faces. So what power of positive doing is, you're saying, is what I'm doing make me feel good? If it is, I can do more. If it's not, then I can change.
Yes.
And I can always act positively. Now this takes us to the third. And I know you're not letting you ask your questions, but I told you I like to talk.
That's all good, buddy.
And so that what happens, the third rule is the brain says, anytime something's important, I will give you more fuel. It's called nervous energy. Now, for example, I was just watching something yesterday on the Lions triple championship years.
Yeah, I got a question about that because I'm assuming it's the same documentary I just watched as well.
Yeah, and but in it, you could see that one of the things that the players learned is that the bigger the event, the less you change. Don't change your duty. You see, 10 stories up, you would change. Now, if I say, listen, you're my 800-meter athlete, and you're in the Olympics, and you're in the final. And I say, golf, you got here using plan A. And if you use plan A tomorrow, you got 97% chance of getting gold. But since it's really important, let's go to plan Z, which is a 53% chance. Now, you'd fire me as a coach.
Well, it sounds ludicrous.
Absolutely. And who's the best coach any of us get? Ourselves. And so quite often what we do is we change. And we stop doing what works for us. For example, I work with musicians and actors and that sort of stuff. And one of the things I teach them is make sure that you don't change. For example, if I'm practicing in front of the mirror playing clarinet, and 3 days time to go to Carnegie Hall, the skills in front of Carnegie Hall are the same in front of the mirror. But what happens is when you get tense, you tend to lean back. Put your elbows tight. Now, I'm going to get you to do this. Listeners aren't going to see it, but I want you to put your elbows tight. Yeah. Clarinet, big black stick.
Yes.
Now, what I want you to do is lean forward and put your elbows wider. Hold up the clarinet. Notice your brain says you can play clarinet.
Yes.
Even though you can't.
Yes.
And he just dropped his notes for people. What just happened. But he's laughing, which makes you feel good.
Yes.
And so what happens is I get people saying to me, why do your people do so much better? And actually, University of Melbourne did a study of my stuff. And they said, Phil, we're really surprised. And I said, why? Not that the people you worked with did better than the people you didn't, but the people you worked with had the same amount of performance anxiety as the people you didn't. See, fuel is good. The fuel in my car that I drove down here from Brisbane today is really good. I just don't take a match to it. I had this girl, she went to Olympics, but there was a thing in the paper a month before the Tokyo Olympics. And she came and seemed she was about a 12 or 13-year-old. And I said, why are you here? She says, I get really nervous. I said, that's fine, that's fuel. She says, oh no, I vomit. I said, that's not good. She said, when you drive the lower meets and you run fast and don't vomit, what do you do in the car? I talk rubbish. When you get to the track, what do? I run on top of your kids. And everybody's different. My wife would have been quiet on the good days. Now, I said, what do you do on the important meets? I'm quiet in the car, and I'm quiet at the track. Let's see if I got this straight. When you talk rubbish in the car, run around at the track, you run fast and don't vomit. When you're quiet in the car, quiet at the track, you run badly and vomit. And you want to run fast and not vomit. What do you think she'd do tomorrow? She's going to Queensland track meet. She said, go back to plan A. She broke 3 Queensland records. And in the paper, she said, I talked to Phil Jonesy those years ago, and he taught me nerves are good. Just don't change.
Use it for your advantage and use your nervous energy for good, not for bad, yeah?
It's actually it's like when you have a lot of nerves, what happens is that you have two taps, the perform tap and the fail tap. And the brain says, do you want to do better or do worse? There's two questions I ask people all the time. Question number one, if you're arrested on charges of trying to be successful, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Question number two, is what you're doing getting you where you want to get? In other words, if I toss my tennis racket on the ground and my next point's worse, and the opponent thinks they're beating me.
Yes.
That's not really smart stuff.
Yes.
And so I'm always asking myself, is what I'm doing making things better? And in an interview recently that we were watching, Lee Matthews said, and Wayne Bennett told me the same thing, that you don't talk to players when you're annoyed, because all that does is say how much you hate the players.
Yes.
It doesn't help the players perform.
Yes.
And it's not about helping the players think bad about themselves. What the players need to know, a strategy to how they perform. So those are the three rules. Your brain will give you thoughts you act on. Pain is good. Anytime you have pain, what you're doing is not working. And then finally, when you get more energy, don't change.
Cool. Very cool. Now, in that Lions documentary, Lee Matthews attributed a quote to you. So I want you to break the quote down for us. So I want to, if I misquote you, you're free to tell me, of course.
That'd be number three.
So you can't change, what is it? I got it wrong. We can't care what you do. We can't care what you think. We only care what you do.
And that's spot on.
Is that what you said?
Absolutely.
What does it mean?
What's that?
What does it mean?
Well, what it means is simply, you see, if you worry about how you feel, you worry about how you think, then you change your actions. So you can't change how you think. For example, you're in a grand final, you're going to be negative, aren't you?
Well, I wouldn't be. I'd be super happy about being in the grand final.
But what I mean is that you get a lot of nerves.
Yeah.
And you're worried about failing because it's really important.
Yeah, no, fair call.
So you're not going to be totally confident, but you can act confidently. And so one of the things I tell people, if you can't see it, you can't fix it. I've never seen a thought, never seen a motivation. So if you're working for me, I would never say you have a bad attitude, you're undisciplined, or you're lazy. Well, first reason, only a saint can say that, and there's no Saint Phil. But the second thing, I've never seen those things. I can say you haven't done 3 out of 4 things.
Okay.
2 out of 6 things you've done badly, and you're taking 5 times longer than somebody else. Another, everything that I do is my fault. So I can control that. So it doesn't matter whether I have doubts or whether I'm down on myself. I have to understand what is my plan A. So in my case, I'm what's called a mozzie, buzzing around, chirping. If I start going slowly, so when Tim was in hospital, if I talked like this, I would have been terrible. And my wife, on the other hand, she's very structured, logical. So she's talked my way, she'd be terrible. She was an English teacher.
Yes.
She's actually become my PA. So now I tell people I sleep with my secretary and my wife doesn't mind. Actually, I think she does.
Well, she maybe.
So basically what we try to tell the players is know who you are, know what works for you, and go out and do it. And you see, in sport, there's 2 things you have to understand the difference between. First is an aim and a goal. An aim is winning. A goal is executing. For example, Grant Hackett broke a world record but came second to a guy named Thorpe.
Yep.
He didn't achieve his aim, but he did achieve his goals.
I understand, yes.
At the end of this interview, I want to do things to make you feel good, but I can't guarantee that. You can be saying, I've already sold my cow, so I have no use for your bull now. Don't listen to that old dinosaur. I can't control how you react. But if I walk out of here and I've said the things that I found in interviews like this, people found it helpful,
yep.
Then I haven't achieved my aim. And that's the other thing. And Wayne Bennett said this after the South's grand final. I teach people there's disappointment and regret. Disappointment when you played really well, but you didn't achieve. Grant Hackett was disappointed, but didn't have regret. Regret is where you know you turned your computer off, you stopped executing, stopped working.
You had the sooks.
Yeah, whatever. People get down on yourself. And what Wayne said after the game, he said, our guys are disappointed, but I'm proud of them because they don't have regret.
Cool. Now, the last question I have for you, because I knew I'd only get 3 in, so I only prepared 3.
Good, you know me.
My last question was, I saw an interview with Jonathan Brown. Like I say, I'm mad for the Lions. Saw an interview with Jonathan Brown, and he said, when Phil Jauncey was working with us, he would give us cheat sheets on the opposition. So he would come up to us and he'd say, you're playing such a team today. For example, what I want you to do, this particular player, if you needle him and sledge him and get under his skin, he'll play worse. This fellow, don't go anywhere near him because it'll just fire him up. He would give us a good psychology breakdown of the opposition before we would go out and play against them. So my question to you, Phil, is firstly, why did you do that? And secondly, what benefit is there of getting under somebody's skin?
Well, again, it's the old thing I tell people, and I played rugby league, I was so bad I never got sledged. In other words, nobody wanted me to go from my plan A, because my plan A was everybody else's plan Z. But what happens, you want the player to play you, not the game. And they want them to turn off their computers. And so you find things, for example, Ian Healy loved the profiles when he was captain in Queensland years ago. And he knew that Steve Waugh was very structured and very thoughtful. So he'd make field placings that make no sense.
So Steve Waugh's standing there going, what the hell has he put that bloke over there?
And he turns his computer off.
I understand.
Conversely, Mark Waugh was somebody who wanted to be liked. And he would, so they'd make comments about why he's not doing the right thing, his bum's getting big or something. And then we had a guy play for Queensland, but he went down to Victoria. Marty, who's now coaching the women's cricket team, a lovely guy. And he's what we call a Mozzie. Now, Mozzies like to be upbeat and smiling. The guys wouldn't talk to him, and they slowed him down. And he said, I know what you guys are doing, but it turned his computer off. So the idea of talking and knowing your opposition is making sure you don't do. See, for example, an enforcer, if I get you angry, you'll play better.
Yes.
So you don't do that. But if to a feeler you say you're not worth anything, we'll drop our bundle. And it's very important in this thing, that the Lions thing you saw, is where Lee was saying that it was important to know which players that you need to give them a lot of warning when you're going to do it.
Yep.
Other players like Brownie, don't tell them ahead of time. You know, and every player, he had worked out how they do that. I had one group of players that we call thinker feelers. And we used to get groups of similar players together because it's really good if you get a Nigel Appin sharing his demons with a young rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Because similar profiles have similar demons. And I do this with all the sporting teams I work with, do it with companies as well. Anyway, the players one time said, if Lee hasn't talked to us for a couple of weeks, we think he's annoyed at us. And I said, guys, Lee is a professional elite coach. He's not going to use telepathy. And I said, guys, why do you think that? And they looked at me and said, because that's what you do. See, the thinker feelers, when they're annoyed at you, they don't tell you. They give you subtle hints. Now, somebody like me, I'm not just thick as a brick on my whole wall. It goes right through to the keeper. And my wife's learned you can't be subtle with Phil. You got to hit him in the head with a sledgehammer because he won't get the point.
That's very cool.
But so Lee, we're talking about these cheat sheets with all the players,
yeah.
Lee worked out that every one of those group of players, he talked to them every week. It might only be 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Whereas people like myself, if I'd been a player, and I would have felt sorry for Lions if I was, but if I'd been a player, it wouldn't have bothered me. You know, it wouldn't have bothered an Acker or a Leper, whether somebody talked to him or not. They wouldn't get there. But the quiet ones, they thought, oh, have I done something to offend you?
But what about the opposition? Because like sledging the opposition, how can, I mean, it's kind of an obvious question, I know, but like Jonathan Brown was saying, like Phil had come up to us and he'd say, you're playing on Joe Bloggs today. Now, Joe Bloggs, if you were to say to Joe Bloggs, you know, you're shit house, he's going to go, oh, and he'll drop his bundle and you'll get the better of him. So why would you?
See, it's not so much about sledging. It's working out. And a lot of those players, for example, Browning was an enforcer. So if he's playing against another enforcer, he would work out, don't do what I do. You know, he works out what works for him.
Yes.
Now, enforcers, their biggest problem is anger. So you needle them. You don't sledge them. Needle them. And then they'll give away penalties.
Yes.
With Mozzies, they love to be upbeat and smiling. So you get really serious. With feelers, you let them know that you don't value them. You don't rate them. And with the thinkers, you act illogically.
And all's fair in love and war, Phil?
Well, I think it's as long as you don't dehumanize the other people.
Yeah, so there is a line that you don't cross, clearly. Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. But, you know, all's fair, you know, as long as, you know, it's not obviously racist or anything of that nature, as long as you keep it.
It's in good fun. Because yeah. I find most of the people, when we do this, they can have a beer together after the game.
Yeah.
Like, Marty knew exactly what we were doing.
Yes.
You know, and so it wasn't putting dehumanizing.
Yes.
It's actually for finding out these people, for the computer to be on, like with me, I have to be upbeat really quick. Now, if you're trying to stuff up an interview, get me to stuff up an interview, you'd be slowing me down, getting to. Now, conversely, you're similar. If I suddenly had these long, big gaps, you'd be going, what? And so it's about understanding performance team sports. It's just like you work out, if we cut behind them or they're not fast enough, they're slow enough. And sometimes it's in coaching as well. For example, we had a lot of ruckmen that were feelers. But we had Damien Burke as our ruck coach.
Yes.
And he was an enforcer, tough as nails.
Yes, he was.
And he said, Phil, I've worked out, because I would be telling players, you've got to be really aggressive towards your opposition. Get them to fear you. Mm-hmm. That didn't work for them. So he worked out with the fielders. He said, just get close to them and detach quickly. Yes. And push. But he didn't use the word aggression, anger, because it didn't work for the feelers. And so it's important to understand, like, my wife and I have good mental computers, but they're different.
Yes.
And so if I have a Microsoft computer and you have an Apple, they're both good computers, but I don't put my Microsoft on your Apple, and you don't put your Apple software on my Microsoft. And that's where this all comes into, is to help people understand themselves. It's not just in sport. It's in businesses. I have two Zoom sessions this week with business leaders where we're actually going through profiles of them, helping them understand themselves and understand what they sometimes do won't work with others. For example, when we were warming up, I spoke in Spanish. Well, I wouldn't be speaking Spanish in this program, porque toda la gente habla en español. It would be stupid. Well, the same thing, if I'm a coach, and I'm using a mental language that's not yours,
yes,
I might as well be talking double Dutch.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So we're coming to the end. Phil, thank you so much for coming in, by the way. Now, I know you do have a couple of books out and about, and you do, as you say, you're still a working man, and brother needs to, eat and put a roof over his head. So give yourself a dirty, great big plug, Phil. Where can people go to learn more about you and purchase your wares?
Well, I've got a website, philjauncey.com. And but the other, so you can look it on the net, Phil Jauncey, you'll find it easily. I have two printed books. The first one, Understanding Yourself and Others, Understanding Ourselves and Others, and then it's Managing Yourself and Others, the second book. And then the third book is an ebook about power positive doing. I might mention a story about the second book. When it got published, the publisher knew nothing about sport. And we had 400 people come to my launch. This is back in 2003. And of course, who had I had my major speakers? Wayne Bennett, Lee Matthews, John Buchanan, Brian Curl. And he didn't realize that they didn't come for my book. They came for those people. So yeah, it's easy to catch up with me. There's my website is very easy accessible.
They're fantastic. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to you speak, Phil. Truly, I have. And that does bring us to the end of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast for this week. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a friendly comment, rate and review. 5 stars is always helpful. Thanks again, Phil, for coming in today. I really do appreciate it.
It's my fun. Always love to talk.
And of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we will talk to you then.